you in the 06010. Focus. Fantasy. Fantasy Focus. Hello and welcome into the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast. Today's podcast is presented by Geico. Switch to Geico and see all the ways that you could save. It is Monday, August 29th. We are just one full week away from football. One more weekend, and then it is here. My name is Daniel Dopp. I am joined by my friends Stefania Bell and Field Yates here in studio. How was your guys' weekend, Stefania?
It was great.
Yeah?
It was great. Did a little work on Saturday morning. Did a little sports center.
Oh.
And then went to Rhode Island. Apparently, that was a popular thing to do this weekend.
It was. Yeah, my wife, Chapin, and I found ourselves on Rhode Island as well with our lovely daughter, Kinley. And my wife turns, well, I can't say what age she turns. She's young. She's young. Whatever. Yeah. She's 31 tomorrow. Chapin won't care.
Yeah.
It's her birthday tomorrow. So we were sort of getting ahead of the curve a little bit with a lot going on during the week, during this time of the year. And enjoying one of our final weekends before the football season takes over, which we all love football, but we also love our time to be able to spend with our family and loved ones.
Did you ever consider not having a birthday during the football season?
You know, interestingly enough, Daniel, when we first met, that was one of the first considerations.
Yeah.
Like, you know, this everyone's got a flaw, right? My wife's only flaw is that her birthday happens to fall on a very popular draft night. I've got like 14 drafts this year, and every league that one of the dates suggested was, can you do August 30th? No, absolutely not.
Nope, definitely not.
Not going to happen.
Can't
so tomorrow,
smart,
other
smart
than
man.
Our
smart
Fantasy
man.
Focus League, which we'll be doing tomorrow during the day, which
That's
is an
right.
exception, but
That's
at nighttime, right. we're going to dinner and hopefully, I don't know, watching a movie or something afterwards. Who knows? If the weather cooperates, maybe we'll be out late, like
for
real
you.
Adults.
You know what I would do if I were you? You know what says true romance, like none other?
I know what you're going to say.
It's Hard
Let me
Knocks
guess.
At 10
of course.
Hard Knocks at 10 p.m., Bill.
Of course. All right. We have a contractual obligation to mention Hard Knocks on every show.
That's
we
true.
Have so far hit it every single day. Let's talk football.
All right. Let's talk about some football. And speaking of my Detroit Lions, Stefania, we're going to start with you. Detroit Lions took on the Pittsburgh Steelers this week. Looking for some updates because we saw some stuff, unfortunately, with Deontay Johnson and both Najee Harris. But where are we at on both of those Steelers here this week?
Well, Deontay Johnson landed hard on his shoulder while making a beautiful catch,
yes.
a nice thrown catch from Mitch Trubisky to Deontay Johnson. But unfortunately, he landed hard on his shoulder and ended up leaving the game and not returning. They labeled it an injury. You know, sometimes you think, well, he's just done for the night. No, they labeled it an injury. However, very importantly, Mike Tomlin said afterward that had it been a regular season game, there's potential that he could have returned. So it doesn't sound like it's overly serious as far as Deontay Johnson. So that's a good thing. Najee Harris, their running back, I thought looked fantastic when he was out there running. Really great.
Yep.
But the thing that sort of stirred the pot was Najee afterwards and speaking about why he's been out of camp so much was talking about his foot. And he kind of said, nah, I didn't get stepped on. I actually had a sprained Lisfranc. That's how he referred to it. We typically call it a Lisfranc sprain. But again, Lisfranc ligament in the foot. It's a very strong ligament. And if you injure it, we've seen there's a spectrum of injury, right? It can be something that costs guys a few weeks. It can be something that is season ending, like it was for Travis Etienne and needed surgery. Najee Harris said he was about 4 to 5 weeks out. He's feeling better. He was running well. And he said he just needed to knock the rust off. But he said he was pretty much over it. I just want to address this because I saw this talked about quite a bit on social media last night. People were like, oh my gosh, he's had this Lisfranc injury. Is this going to be a problem during the year? And then why were the Steelers playing him? So a couple of things. Number one, Lisfranc injuries have a wide range of possibilities to them. They do not all mean season-ending injuries that require surgery. Sometimes it can be very mild. It's just a small sprain, and it takes a couple weeks to get better. If the foot is unstable, that's a serious injury, requires surgery. Stable, you get better with rest and rehab. Clearly, it was a stable injury for Najee Harris, or they wouldn't have had him out run again. Number two, as far as this idea that players shouldn't play at all in the preseason, we need to stop with this. One of the reasons the NFL adjusted the training camp structure this year is because they wanted to acclimate players to playing football. We see the highest spike of injuries when you're not acclimated. If Najee Harris never got any reps, his injury risk would go way up in the first game of the season when he would be subjected to 4 quarters of football back to back without ever taking a game rep. Now, Najee Harris, he said he needed to get reps. He needed it mentally. He needed it physically. I thought they handled it beautifully. He had a great, however many minutes he ended up playing. And I thought
Four
it was
carries.
Exactly what he needed
yeah.
to get part of it is the confidence too. Like, I know my foot's okay. I went out there and it's fine. So all of this, like, why did they play him? They actually may have done him a favor as far as injury risk by playing him the way they did yesterday, as opposed to holding him out.
Yeah, playing him doesn't bother me at all. Feel that if that's what he needs to be able to do. It's the last preseason game of the year, not like the Hall of Fame game. No offense to Josh Jacobs. Yes. But from that standpoint, does this move any the needle for you from a fantasy perspective?
Let's talk about Deontay Johnson, which I think maybe is a little bit more pertinent here, because Najee had not seen his ADP fall at all. He's still going as one of the top five or six running backs.
To
be honest with you, the injury kind of flew under the radar because the Steelers had so little concern publicly surrounding Najee's availability.
But
for
it
week
certainly
one.
Has been talked about. I just had seen so much dialogue after last night that I wanted to be like,
got it.
The brakes on it.
I had not previously been worried about it. I remain unworried after Stefania's comments there. And Deontay Johnson, my only thought is that, and this is not related to the shoulder injury last night, which again, as Stefania said, no major concern as described by Mike Tomlin to Evan Washburn on the CBS broadcast, is that maybe Deontay Johnson is being a little bit undervalued right now. The reason I mention that is not because of the shoulder or anything related to last night. At the beginning of training camp, all the reports about the Steelers quarterbacks were woeful. It was, they can't complete a pass and seven shots, and it looks like this team is going to take a big step back. And not only do they overpay for Mitch Trubisky, but they also whiffed on Kenny Pickett. I know preseason games can often be worth nothing, and we'll talk about that with a couple other takeaways in just a little bit. But it does feel as though the tenor surrounding the quarterback play in Pittsburgh got better as training camp wore along, and both Mitch Trubisky and Kenny Pickett looked solid in preseason to the point that I don't know if you're necessarily called a dramatic upgrade, but I'm not so sure this is a downgrade for Deontay Johnson either, and that's been one of the big pushbacks on his value is that, yeah, he's fourth in targets in the NFL over the past two seasons, but now he's got Mitch Trubisky or Kenny Pickett throwing to him. This might actually help his value. And right now he's going as wide receiver 15. He could easily push for 150 targets this season.
Yeah, it's hard to think that the quarterback play in Pittsburgh could be much worse than what it is that they had last year.
No, but there's still nostalgia surrounding Ben Roethlisberger, right? And not only that, like Mitch Trubisky, not exactly a guy who crushed it during his first tenure as a starter with the Chicago Bears. And then Kenny Pickett was a polarizing prospect in some people's eyes because breakthrough season, there were the questions about whether he was sort of just a, you know, it was all sort of, I don't know, dump offs and easy short throws or not. But both those guys, to me, I thought looked solid. And I think this Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback situation is actually encouraging going into the year.
I agree with you there. And we're going to save the rest of our Steelers conversation. We have Steelers up for double trouble tomorrow.
So good. Perfect.
Get in deeper on them with that. All right. We have one more thing specifically from the, actually we have a couple more things, but I'm going to handle this really quickly. Over the weekend, we had news that Brian Robinson was a part of a potential attempted break-in. As a part of that, he was shot, unfortunately, multiple times, and we have been told that he is doing okay. He is in stable condition. But I just want to say for me, and I think I speak for the rest of the group here, like this is one of those stories where I'm more worried about the person. We can talk about fantasy later. We're not going to dive into what this means for potential Commanders running backs. That's not the point of what this is. This is one of those things where the human element just means more. And I want not just for us here, but all of you at home, please do the best you can in sending your love and well wishes and positive vibes. However you do that to Brian and his family, join us in doing that. And we'll have more as there's more updates to be able to come from that.
Well said.
All right. We got a couple of quarterbacks that did pretty stinking well, I think, this weekend. I want to start with Justin Fields because, holy cow, he is right now not being drafted as a top 10 quarterback, not being drafted as a top 12 quarterback, not being drafted as a top 15 quarterback. Yeah. But we are excited about the potential growth that he could have in this week. It looks like we saw a couple things here in preseason. 14 for 16, 156 yards, three touchdowns, including one to tight end sleeper Cole Kmet. Field, when you see this kind of play from Justin Fields, does it move the needle from you at all right now? Like, I can't imagine you're moving him in your draft radar, but it's more so, hey, Justin Fields might really be turning it on, and this is a thing that we're going to have to keep watching.
So a couple of takeaways here. The answer is no, it has not changed my ranking for Justin Fields in the pre-draft process, because for as sharp as he was, it is still a preseason game, and especially the third preseason games, which for some teams was like what we used to have in the fourth week of the preseason. You're playing basically backup level players. We did not see the likes of, you know, some of the best players on various rosters, whether it was a Myles Garrett type player or, you know, there are a lot of players around the league that were not suiting up in this third preseason week. But what I will say is that if you are optimistic about Justin Fields, there are a couple of things that you glean from this. First of all, is that he was a guy that coming out of college, some thought during his final college season, he might push Trevor Lawrence for being the number one player taken off the board. He was not, but there was a time during his Ohio State career where he was thought of that highly.
Yeah.
A couple other things here. We did not see much in the way of running from Justin Fields. No surprise there. It's the preseason, but they continue to see a connection with Cole Kmet, which is encouraging because, as we all know, Cole Kmet last year was really solid in every way except for not catching any touchdown passes. So if you're optimistic about Justin Fields, this was an encouraging performance. I'm still concerned as far as the fantasy value goes because he still has such a lack of clear-cut weapons around him in Chicago right now. Maybe that changes over the next few days with roster cutdowns, but a good performance. My biggest takeaway from watching the Bears this preseason, so that team plays extremely hard. They're extremely determined during the preseason, which, does that matter? We'll find out, but I think this team's going to be a grittier out than some are currently expecting them to be.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say, and I know we're all excited about Justin Fields, and I'm with you, Field, the idea. Darnell Mooney and Cole Kmet feel like the two obvious guys that are there. I wish that he just had a few more skill position players to be able to help him take that next step. Stefania, quarterback that doesn't need more skill position players. Tua Tagovailoa already has Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. And to be honest, he looked pretty good yesterday, including a really deep pass to Tyreek Hill.
Oh, yeah. The bang, bang to open the game, right? I mean, this is what everybody was questioning whether he'd be able to do. And it looked like he did it. 51-yard completion to Tyreek Hill. And I think that was just, you know, okay, they announced that. A lot of short and intermediate work after that. But I think Tua's looked good. I think he's looked solid for a couple of games. So let's see what happens when we get to the regular season. But I think they have a lot. I think they have a lot to be pleased with there.
Yeah, there's some encouraging signs from Tua so far this preseason. As far as fantasy goes, the reality is going to be that unless Tua becomes like this precision passer who just lights it up for 250 or 300 yards a week, it's going to be hard for him to move that far up in our rankings. He is not as immobile as some of the guys that are ahead of him, like Tom Brady as an example, but he's also not a super fleet of foot athlete. So I think he's appropriately ranked as like quarterback 16 off the boards. A couple things break right, and Tua could be a rock solid starter in 12-team leagues.
I totally agree with that. Anything else that we want to add on the Dolphins before we move on?
Well, before we move off of the Dolphins, I do want to acknowledge the passing of Jason Jenkins, their senior vice president of Communications and Community Affairs. The Dolphins announced this. He passed just hours before their game on Saturday, and the news was shared with the team in the locker room and clearly hit them very hard. And Jason Jenkins was described by Tom Garfinkel, who's the Dolphins vice chairman, as a, quote, beacon of the community. And I think that's one of the things that was so notable about him. But for any of us who had dealings with communications with the Dolphins, we interacted with Jason, and he was kind and gentle and warm and friendly to everyone who came across his path, and worked for the Dolphins for 14 years and with the 49ers before that. And so I just wanted to acknowledge all that he did for those of us in the journalism path who passed through the Miami Dolphins offices at some point in our career. And we just want to share our condolences, offer our condolences to his wife, Elizabeth, and their children, and to all who are impacted in the Miami organization.
Well said.
Double trouble. As of this moment, they're on double secret probation.
All right, we are talking Browns and Ravens. Not as exciting of a list from fantasy contributors as we've had in some past episodes, but really quickly, we're going to start at quarterback. Jacoby Brissett. He has thrown officially 36 passing touchdowns in 37 career starts.
Correct.
Not somebody that you should be drafting within fantasy this year.
Yeah, obviously not going to draft Jacoby Brissett. I'm not even sure he's a two quarterback option. I think the question people are wondering though for the Browns quarterbacks is it justifiable to use a pick on Deshaun Watson? He's out for 11 games. Reminder that that also means he's out for 12 weeks because the Browns bye comes before the end of Deshaun Watson's suspension, which means that if you just sort of play this out even further, Deshaun Watson's going to be out for the first 12 weeks of, depending on how your league is set up, a 14-week regular season. I don't believe he's worth a draft pick. I don't care how many. I mean, if you have a deep bench, it's a different story. But if you are playing in a 10 or 12-team league with a 16-person roster, I don't believe you need to use a draft pick on Deshaun Watson. I know it's still difficult to separate some of the things that we talk about in fantasy football from what Deshaun Watson is suspended for. And I get if some people still don't want to draft Deshaun Watson just off principle about that. But I would just say, if you're interested in using Deshaun Watson, if you're interested in Deshaun Watson as a fantasy football player and you are wondering, hey, is it worth me drafting him and stashing him? My answer would be no. There are just way too many other spots on your roster that can be much more valuable for 12 weeks. You can find plenty of other good quarterbacks.
I could not agree more. It is way too deep of a position, and why hold on to someone that's not going to play the first 12 games of the season and all the other stuff that comes along with it. So with that being said, we're looking at the guys on this team that do have fantasy relevance. I'm going to start with Nick Chubb. Stefania, I'm going to start with Nick Chubb. He's boring. I'm just going to say it. Nick Chubb is boring. Seven games with over 12 fantasy points last year, okay? He had seven games with 12 or more fantasy points. He had six games with single-digit fantasy points. That lack of pass-catching upside is what keeps those single-digit fantasy games from being 12, 13, 14 points for fantasy managers. He is a boring running back in the middle of the RB2 conversation. And given this offense this year, are you still okay? And I realize I'm leading this in a negative light, but are you still okay using a pick on Nick Chubb here as your RB2 heading into the season?
Absolutely. Number one, I think they're going to lean on the run game a little bit more with Jacoby Brissett under center. So I'm fine with this. And also, you have to look contextually at some of those numbers that you just gave. Nick Chubb has been largely very durable across his career.
Yep.
But last year, he did miss a couple of games with a calf injury. So if you look at the game where he got hurt and also the first game after he came back, those numbers were definitely down compared to his plus 100 yard games that he had. He has 22 games with 100 rushing yards over the past four seasons. Only Derrick Henry has more with 23. One of the best skill sets of Nick Chubb is that he has incredible yards after contact. He is a guy, because he's so strong in his lower half, that he will drag defenders with him. And after he gets hit, he averages 3 yards per contact. That was in 2021, second only to Rashad Penny. And if you think about it, Nick Chubb sustained it for much longer because Rashad Penny really, he had those couple of explosive games, but he really only was a factor in several games during the season. So I love Nick Chubb. Jonathan Taylor loves Nick Chubb.
Yes, he does.
He picks him as one of his top running backs. And what he says, one of the things you look for in a running back who you want to last during the season is you want to see that they have that incredible lower body strength, because that's where guys will try and tackle you. That's where they will try and bring you down. And if you're stronger in the lower half, you're more likely to be able to stay on the field.
Fielder, are you worried about negative game script at all within this Browns offense and how that could impact Nick Chubb's lack of pass catching?
No, I'm not, because it's not like they've had great quarterback play throughout the entirety of his NFL career, as Stefania alluded to some of this stuff, but he has career averages. He played for 4 years, Nick Chubb has. His career average is over 1,200 rushing yards a season and 9 rushing touchdowns per season. The guy is about as consistent of a player as we have in the NFL. He's arguably the best pure runner in the NFL. Other guys in that conversation include the likes of Derrick Henry and Jonathan Taylor. He's the third highest yards per attempt in NFL history. Third highest ever. Jamal Charles slightly above him, and I believe Jim Brown is still number one. Yeah. That's amongst running backs, by the way. You got guys like Lamar Jackson and Michael Vick that are higher, which makes sense. Quarterbacks run a little bit less frequently and in different sort of run attempts. But you know he's going to get the ball a lot. He had at least 20 touches in half of his games that he played last year. The offensive line in Cleveland still very good, even with some questions about how they address that center spot due to the cut of J.C. Treader earlier this offseason, and then some injuries to some players that have attempted to replace him. But you know what you're getting with Nick Chubb. And while that may not necessarily be a guy who's got a real shot at a top 8 running back season, you have a pretty good feeling he's going to be somewhere between RB10 and RB20. The mitigating factor, as you guys have both referenced, is pass catching. In 58 games, he has 92 career catches. He has one receiving touchdown over the past 3 seasons. He is a better pass catcher than those numbers suggest. But Nick Chubb, one of my favorite players in the NFL to watch, as reliable as you can probably find in that RB2 range, really solid value, basically where he is going right now, which is somewhere between RB11 and RB15.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're on the short list with Jim Brown, you're probably pretty good.
Of course. And this is not, yeah. I realized I led into a lot of that with like negative negative talking about pass catching, but in looking at these RB2s, a part of that is the upside, right? Field said it. The idea that, Nick Chubb could be a top seven running back without being able to be a pass catcher isn't a thing that I think is in the cards for this year or in the future. But with the idea that he is able to be so consistent, he's utilized so much within the ground game, the volume that he has, like as a solid RB2, it doesn't get much better than Nick Chubb. All right, let's talk about his backfield mate, Kareem Hunt. He was a top 20 running back in 2022, but he missed nine games last year, Stefania. Is there any concern about Kareem Hunt coming back or potentially dealing with any of the things that he struggled with last year?
No, I think the fact that he came back, he also had a calf injury. It was kind of unusual. They had two of very similar injuries in their backfield, and his was a little more severe, hence the longer missed time. But the fact that he was able to come back and be productive, that there's no real carryover
from that standpoint. Field, understanding that right now he's going as running back 28 on ESPN ADP.
Yeah.
To me, that's a little bit lower than a flex play from that standpoint. As a running back, I don't think I would have running back 28 as a flex play. But what is it that you look at at Kareem Hunt as within your fantasy lineup? Is he a guy that's a bye week fill in for you? Is he a late round or a later on flex play when you have wide receivers on bye?
If you go either hero running back or zero running back, there's a pretty solid spot here for Kareem Hunt. And sure, if you play in a deeper league, 12 teams or 14 leagues or even larger, he's going to be a useful RB2 for you. So I think people are kind of always wondering, is there room for two running backs in one backfield to have fantasy relevant weeks consistently? The answer is in Cleveland, yes. We mentioned how Nick Chubb, over his entire career, four seasons, has 92 catches. Well, Kareem Hunt, as the backup, playing a smaller role than Nick Chubb in 3 years with the Browns, has 97 catches. In 32 career games with the Browns, 97 catches, 319 carries. So 10 carries per game and over 3 catches per game for Kareem Hunt. So between targets factored in there as well, somewhere around 15 opportunities per game for Kareem Hunt. You also know that if something happens to Nick Chubb, you have a guy that you're going to have in your lineup every single week. Nick Chubb did get hurt last year. It was partially during the time when Kareem Hunt was also hurt, so we saw D'Ernest Johnson step into a larger role. But going into this season, Kareem Hunt, the clear number two in Cleveland. And there can be weeks where both of them make enough hay that they can both be in a fantasy lineup. They've played 29 games together. 29. And if we admit that every time Nick Chubb is playing, you're going to be starting Nick Chubb, the question becomes, will you also start Kareem Hunt? Well, in the 29 games that Kareem Hunt has played and Nick Chubb has also played, Kareem Hunt has been a top 15 back 11 times. So more than 1 in 3 times he has been a top 15 back. And in 15 of those 29 games, he's been a top 25 back. So more than a 50-50 shot at him being a top 25 back. Now, there have been some bust weeks there as well, but he's kind of all right on that fringe. Is he startable in a 10-team league? Maybe not in a perfect world, but he can be used. You have to kind of live with the up and down nature, not to his skill set, but because he is the number two in this Browns offense. Nick Chubb happens to be one of the best running backs in the NFL, but definitely has some value. You play in a 12-team or larger league, he should be a consideration as an RB2.
I like him quite a bit more than a lot of the guys that are going to round him too in that ADP. You've got Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Devin Singletary. I like Devin Singletary. Miles Sanders, then Kareem Hunt, then Antonio Gibson, then Cordero Patterson. I like Kareem Hunt more than almost all of those guys because of the potential upside that he has in that pass catching ability.
I like Patterson more, Miles Sanders more for sure.
No, definitely not.
Well, starters and elite receiving options, right? You don't like that?
No. Well, like, I'm not drafting them as my RB2. And from that standpoint, I've seen enough on Miles Sanders and Cordero Patterson for me to want to be able to go elsewhere with
Patterson, who's a top 12 back last year at over 50 catches, is inferior to a guy who's a backup.
He's not inferior. He's not a guy that I want to roster because as a guy that has been top 20 once in his 9-year career, I'd rather have Kareem Hunt and his pass catching ability than I would rather have Cordero Patterson. Yeah.
I mean, I think Cordero Patterson's a better receiver than Kareem Hunt. I think you'd probably pretty clearly prefer that, right? I would think
definitely a better receiver. I just don't.
Okay.
I've watched, to your point, how many times has Cordero Patterson been in the top 30 of running backs?
Once. He's had one chance to play.
And
he finally has it, right?
He had 8 years before this to prove to the entire NFL that he belonged on that field.
Is that his fault or is it their fault?
That's a great
conversation.
He's
had two chances to get a real role. He was with the Patriots and he crushed it. Won a Super Bowl, was a really important part of their offense. And he's got a chance with the Falcons last year and he crushed it and was a top 12 running back.
Every other team that he played with and he didn't earn a spot on the field to be able to be out there.
I don't know, man. I think... I don't know, man. I think Cordarrelle Patterson is an interesting. All right. I'd board bet him versus Kareem Hunt this season for sure.
Let's do it. Points per game?
No, whatever. Points per game, total points, you name it.
Yeah, I think Kareem Hunt will be a better running back points per game, all the standard caveats, than Cordarrelle Patterson.
Isaiah Cordarrelle Patterson will outscore Kareem Hunt on a points per game basis this season. Put it on the board!
Wow.
Feels like a win to me. I'm so surprised by that.
Cordarrelle Patterson has been awful his entire career, and we've watched Kareem Hunt be good almost his entire career.
But I'm so confused. Yeah, Cordarrelle Patterson was awesome this past season. Yes. Is this the clear cut? Sure, but again, that's not about what he did in the first seven seasons. It's about what he's doing now. I'm so surprised by this.
I'm surprised by the fact that 8 years into someone's career, you would believe based on one season that he's going to repeat after this year.
Okay, I'm surprised. That's all. And I like Miles Sanders more too, right?
Hey,
yeah, starting running back
receivers.
And a good offense. He got unlucky.
Fine. Oh, I think this is the first time Field and I have gotten angry with each other on podcast. I like it.
And it wasn't really, it was such polite angry.
Yeah, but I'm just surprised. Of all the whatever, move forward. Of all the of the hills to die on, that was a surprising one.
Yeah,
yeah.
All right. Right now, Kareem Hunt's ADP is higher than Cordarrelle Patterson. All right, is drafting Amari Cooper based on his name value alone a rookie mistake? And Rookie Mistakes is brought to you by Snickers. Avoid a rookie mistake and eat a Snickers, because right now it feels like drafting Amari Cooper is only about name value, because with Jacoby Brissett under center for 11 straight weeks, I understand what it is that he is and everything he brings to the table as the skill set from a wide receiver. But I don't have a lot of trust in this offense and where he's being drafted. I like a couple other wide receivers around him. Where are you at on Amari Cooper this year, Stefania?
I'm puzzled is where I'm at, because I don't really know how to rank him. I think, I don't know that everything that happened in Dallas was totally his fault, right? There were a lot of options for pass catchers there. He didn't perform well. It seemed like it wasn't a good fit. Remember when he went to Dallas? Remember when he got there and how excited he was? He was coming out of Oakland at the time, they were Oakland, and not happy there, inconsistent, goes to Dallas and becomes like a rock star playing with the Cowboys. But then it petered out. And last year I thought was a really weird year for him, and it wasn't because he was hurt. It was like they didn't click. So off they send him to Cleveland, and you're like, well, how's he going to look in that offense? And now we just don't even know how the entire offense is going to look. So I think he's expected to be the primary target.
He
is the target. There's no more Jarvis Landry, but as to how it all fits when it's put together, that's the part I have trouble with. So yes, he's probably going to get targets in that offense, but I honestly don't know what to make of him. I don't have really high expectations.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because there are players around Amari Cooper in the ranks that you could see a much higher ceiling for them. One example is Allen Robinson, who, even if he's coming off of a down season, the optimistic view for Allen Robinson is like a top 15 wide receiver season, because he plays with Matthew Stafford. He's revitalized. You've got guys like Cooper Kupp drawing attention away from him. Whereas the optimistic season for Amari Cooper is not quite as rosy, because for the first 11 games of the season, he's going to play with Jacoby Brissett. Daniel mentioned that in his 38 games as a starter in the NFL, he's got 37 touchdown passes. But Amari Cooper's a really good player. I mean, he's 28 years old. He's got 5 1,000-yard seasons. He's had at least 5 touchdowns in every single year that he's played.
He's only missed 5 games.
Yeah, he's been largely durable.
He's
now
been really safe from and I say that in a positive way.
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, yeah, he's never been inside the top 10, never been outside the top 30. He has been a little bit up and down in his career. He's also played with really good quarterbacks, right? Derek Carr and then Dak Prescott, two guys who are really, really, really good. So I think you're drafting him almost at like the median range of outcomes here at wide receiver 28. Whereas Allen Robinson, maybe median is correct as well, but the range of outcomes for Allen Robinson feels far more vast than Amari Cooper, right? Like, I think the best case scenario in the first 12 weeks of this season, for Amari Cooper might be like, yeah, he's solidly around wide receiver 18. And then things can get better, obviously, when he has Deshaun Watson. But there are some legitimate concerns. The quarterbacks this year that I came into question marks with during the preseason, Jacoby Brissett has not changed my feeling on him at all. Like, I feel more optimistic about somebody, like, as an example, Geno Smith. I feel the same about Jacoby Brissett. There could be some ugly weeks here for Amari Cooper, especially in a run-first offense that I know the Browns aren't going to have Deshaun Watson. They're not going to be nearly as I would say, a strong on offense. But that first four weeks of the season, if you look at their schedule, like, they could play ground and pound offense to win. So
sort of expect.
I've got him as wide receiver 29.
I like Nick Chubb so much this year. And Amari Cooper, to me, feels like the floor is probably, you could probably define where the floor is, but I think the ceiling is much lower than some of the guys being drafted around him.
I have Amari Cooper at wide receiver 40 in my rankings because there are a lot of guys that I would just rather have him because of that upside. All right. How about a couple of guys that are going around him? Stefania, Adam Thielen.
Yeah,
who is dealing with elderliness, or yes. Amari Cooper?
Oh, you had to bring that up. I will apologize.
Case in point.
I will apologize to you on camera.
Thank you.
Because I said elderliness was not a word.
And guess what?
It's a word.
Yes.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
It's a word. I went and looked it up. I only count tonight if it can't be like the free dictionary. It has to be Merriam-Webster. And it was.
It was.
So yep. Elderliness. Adam Thielen and his elderliness, I will take over Amari Cooper.
Agreed. Field, same?
I have Adam Thielen. Mark Cooper ranked ahead of Adam Thielen.
Adam Thielen. Okay. What about Michael Thomas coming back from injury? Field?
I have Michael Thomas ranked just behind Amari Cooper, but it depends on what you want here, right? This is at the point of the draft where if you want the guy that has a chance for a top 10 wide receiver season, go with Michael Thomas. Yeah. If you want the guy that you think is going to be available but may never reach higher than like wide receiver 15 or 18, go with Amari Cooper.
Yeah, Michael Thomas has a wide range of outcomes for me, which is all predicated on whether he can actually, number one, stay on the field, and number two, whether he's consistent, has a consistent rapport with Jameis Winston. I would take Amari Cooper over Michael Thomas.
All right, I'm taking Juju Smith-Schuster over Amari Cooper in that Chiefs offense. What about you guys? Stefania?
Agreed.
Yeah, again, if what do you want, right? Same thing. If you want a little safer, then maybe Amari Cooper is the play, but even Juju could prove safer. I think Juju is the better option, but if you are concerned that Juju is going to be the Chiefs' third wide receiver, then I feel you if you want to just snag Amari Cooper, who is not only clearly the Browns' number one wide receiver, but there's like a gaping hole at number two for wide receivers right now.
So does anyone else on this roster from that point matter then? Donovan Peoples-Jones, David Bell, David Njoku. Is there another pass catcher here that you like?
I do like David Bell as a late round flyer, but nothing more than that. The problem is that now his quarterback play for the first 11 weeks is going to be substandard, so I don't think he's necessarily a must draft. David Njoku, I think you can pass. He was paid.
Real money, though,
yeah, they paid him real money this offseason. It was kind of a curious contract for a team that does a lot of really solid deals. That one kind of stuck out to me. Hit four games with 10 plus fantasy points last year. David Njoku's made several highlights, right? Like if you YouTubed David Njoku, you'd probably be pretty impressed by some of the stuff you see, but way too inconsistent. I'm happy he got paid. Great athlete, but fantasy football wise, I know tight end does not have a lot of great options, but there are certainly better options than David Njoku.
All right, Caesars has this team at 8 wins flat for the regular season. Field, Yates, I'm going to let you go first. Give Stefania some time to hear what you have to say.
Yeah, I'm going over for the Browns. Again, those first 4 weeks could be pretty favorable for them.
Stefania?
I'm going to go over, and I don't like it. But when I do the math, I come out with about 9.
I'm going to go under.
Uncomfortably.
And I love it. I don't know what you guys are talking about. All right, that's going to do it for the Browns. Now we're going to take a quick break, pay some bills with a word from our friends at Geico.
That's right, Daniel. As Geico asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance? Well, of course you would. After all, who doesn't love a great deal, right? And when it comes to great rates on insurance for all the things in your life, Geico can help. Like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV, even help with homeowners, condo, or renters coverage. You could save even more with a special discount when you bundle your coverages. Plus, add the easy-to-use Geico mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more. And choosing to switch to Geico becomes an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save with great rates and discounts. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote or contact your local agent and get started seeing how much you could save.
You know, hiring is challenging, especially right now when you have so much on your plate. But luckily, there's one place where you can go to where hiring is simple, fast, and smart. A place where growing businesses connected to qualified candidates. And that place is ZipRecruiter.com/FFF. ZipRecruiter does the work for you. ZipRecruiter uses its powerful technology to find and match the right candidates up with your job. You can easily review these recommended candidates and invite your top choices to apply. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post in ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. It is no wonder that ZipRecruiter is the number one rated hiring site based on G2 satisfaction ratings as of January 1st, 2022. And right now, to try ZipRecruiter for free, our listeners can just go to ZipRecruiter.com/FFF. That's ZipRecruiter.com/FFF. ZipRecruiter.com/FFF. One last time, ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. All right, we're going to keep things rolling with the Baltimore Ravens and Field Yates, Lamar Jackson. When we started this season, I believe that Lamar Jackson was a part of your tier one of quarterbacks. We have talked, in case you have not listened on the podcast, obviously we talk about rankings, but one of the things that Field, Mike, and I and Stefania have talked about this year is trying to be better about tier-based rankings, finding be able to have tiers for some of your players. And I believe that Lamar Jackson was at the tail end of your QB1 tier, Field Yates, now that we are all the way through the preseason. Has that changed for you, or are you comfortable with Lamar with where you have him?
Of course I'm comfortable. As a matter of fact, I'm afraid that I'm too low on Lamar Jackson as quarterback 4. This guy is being, I don't know how this is possible, and I get it. He's still being drafted as quarterback 4. We're not talking nearly enough about one of the preeminent fantasy superstars over the past 3.5 seasons. Let's just start with some of the things that did not go well for Lamar Jackson last year, sure, and still paint a picture of how good it was.
Yeah, get those out of
the
way.
Think most people's belief was that last year was Lamar's worst year as a starting quarterback on a full-time basis, inferior to the MVP season and then the year after that as well. He had 16 touchdowns, 13 picks last year. Despite the fact that he played in just 11 full games, he got hurt early in that 12th game. Yep. He had just 6 fewer carries and 17 fewer rushing yards than Jalen Hurts, who led the quarterback position in both of those categories. Jalen Hurts is a good runner. Kyler Murray is a good runner. Russell Wilson's a good runner. Daniel Jones is a good runner. Lamar Jackson's the best runner we have ever seen at the position. Ever. It's not even close, by the way. He is already 7th all-time amongst quarterbacks in rushing yards, just 4 seasons into his career. If you just look at his 50 career starts for Lamar Jackson right now, he has 587 rushing attempts, 3,534 yards, and 20 touchdowns. If you do the math, that equates to 70.68 rush yards per game and 0.4 touchdowns per game. I know you have to get your calculator right now, but put differently, that's 10.08 points per game from Lamar Jackson just as a rusher over 50 starts. That's enough of a sample size to demonstrate that he is literally different than every other quarterback we have in the league right now as a runner. If he just gets back to close to where he was during his second full season as a passer, which won't be 4,000 passing yards, it'll be around 3,000, 25-plus passing touchdowns, he could easily finish as quarterback 1 this year, one of the great talents in this league. He is incredible. Last year and a year, again, I reference, a down year for Lamar Jackson. You know who won the MVP in the NFL last year? Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
Great season, right? He averaged 0.8 fantasy points per game, more than Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson in a bad year can be in the same breath as the NFL's MVP for fantasy football. It's absurd. We don't need to overthink this at all. Lamar Jackson is elite, elite.
I have 2 questions then because of
that. Sure, go for it.
Is the gap between quarterback 3 with Justin Herbert and quarterback 4, Lamar Jackson, narrowing than where we had it? Because I feel like it was always the big 3, I feel like, to start this year.
No, I mean, what have I been saying since the beginning of this season? I've had 5 in my first year for a reason, right? Lamar, to me, is being undervalued. ADP, I still think all these guys, up until probably Jalen Hurts, are being a little bit overvalued. But if you look at the gap, Lamar Jackson's going 2.5 rounds later than Josh Allen. Would I prefer Josh Allen? Yes. But is there a world that Josh Allen scores fewer fantasy points than Lamar Jackson? Also, yes.
Of course.
I mean, the 25 point per game upside for Lamar Jackson is real. That team was in shambles last year. In shambles. And he had 20 fantasy points per game.
Yeah. Is there a world in which Jared Goff could score more fantasy points than Lamar Jackson once this year? Yes.
Yes, it'll happen.
That's going to happen. On that point, though, Field, you talked about how... I just wanted to get a little bit of love in there.
So random.
On that point, though, Field, you talked about the rushing ability, all the things that he brings to the table by utilizing his legs. And Stefania, I'm going to throw this at you because he utilized his legs so much last year, I think in part because their running game was a mess. Their running backs... He always runs a lot, but they had a bunch of guys that they were just rotating through, and right, this year doesn't feel like it's starting off that different.
It's not. I mean, last year they knew they didn't have J.K. Dobbins. They knew they didn't have Gus Edwards.
Who did they run with last year? Latavius Murray.
Le'Veon Bell. They had all kinds of players there.
Yeah.
No. Devontae Freeman. Deontay Foreman is who you're thinking of, who was with Titans. Yeah.
You know, yes. I'm mixing my words.
Devontae Freeman's.
But
it's all about the
bottom line was they were rotating so much that I'm like rotating their names around. Anyway, this year it's not like the backfield's all of a sudden back and fully healthy. So I don't know how much it changes what Lamar Jackson does per se, but they will certainly benefit from the fact that he is able to run and he's not going to stop doing it. It's part of his game.
Yeah. Come on now. Let's not overthink this, guys. I'm just saying. And they're not going to overthink it either.
They aren't. It's not so much that the running backs are going to impact how much Lamar runs, but so much do we think that the running backs are they going to have a much more limited role to start the season because of the fact that J.K. Dobbins has been dealing with some stuff? Gus Edwards still not off PUP? Or do you think that once they get out there, you know, it's a full workload for those running backs?
No, it's not a full workload. So let's start with J.K. Dobbins because he's the most, you know, it's the most hot button topic is what happens with J.K. Dobbins to start the season. Obviously, he's not back fully yet. He's still no contact. I mean, people realize he's still no contact.
10 days away from the first NFL game.
Do you remember when I first brought this up about concerns about J.K. Dobbins? It was like a couple months ago. Boy, did I hear about it. Yeah. Crazy, you know?
Yeah.
It's not crazy. There was a reason that he was behind and it's sort of playing out. And it doesn't mean, again, doesn't mean he can't get there. But the Ravens have been very smart about bringing him back. He's had some soreness or stiffness. So after a day of practice, they have scaled him back a couple of days. So ask yourself the question, why would they, if that's how they've behaved so far, then say, oh, it's the start of the season. You are going to jump in and play a full workload and all caution to the wind. That's not what they're going to do. So, yes, there's time for him to get up to the point where he could potentially play week one, although Harbaugh already said he cannot say for sure whether he will be available week one. But if he does, he's not going to be the primary ball carrier. That's what Mike Davis is going to do. So I think there will be a ramp up for J.K. Dobbins, and whether he's even active in week one, we don't know yet. And what his workload looks like will depend on how he responds once he starts to play.
Devontae Freeman, Le'Veon Bell, Latavius Murray, and now Mike Davis.
Yeah, but Mike Davis is still a good player. Like I think sometimes he gets a little bit unfairly railroaded. Like he was awesome 2 seasons ago filling in for Christian McCaffrey.
I was just going to say, 1,000
yards from scrimmage.
He was okay. He started out awesome.
You are crushing people today.
I'm just saying.
Cordarrelle Patterson was awesome in top 12 running back last year. Kyle, what was Mike Davis 2 years ago when he filled in for CMC? I think he was like a top 12 running back as well.
And he started out awesome when he filled in for CMC, and he tailed off towards the end of the season. I'm telling you, like he started out great.
That's
in all
fine.
Those
yeah,
numbers.
But still, the guy got like he got the call. Like the you know this is week two. Like it's not like this is you know Barry Sanders back there. Like Mike Davis, like is a solid, useful 4 to 5 week filling can be
as
pretty decent for
as
you
as an NFL
yeah.
owner. Yes,
he's pretty decent for you. So yeah, I mean here, but let's steer back to J.K. Dobbins just to get back on track here for what we were talking about. Is that so? Stefania gave some really critical information. He does make me a little bit nervous. I'm not going to lie to you. At current cost right now, which is right around RB20, we all know the talent. And J.K. Dobbins is sweet. The guy averaged 6 yards per carry.
I just to add one more thing to what you're talking about. One of the things his game is predicated on is being this strong back. He had, I think it was just under 3 yards, averaged 3 yards after contact in his first season, which, as we mentioned earlier, would have been second last year. But in order to do that, you have to be strong and you have to be powerful. And so when you step back in the game after an injury like this, if that's part of what your game is predicated on, it may take you a lot longer to get to be that guy. It's not just about being on the field.
Sure. So the good stuff for J.K. Dobbins is what Stefania mentioned, some of the numbers there. But as a rookie, he had 134 carries for 805 yards. He had 9 touchdowns. He had this blistering finish to 2020. He had 77 carries, 495 yards, and 7 rushing touchdowns in a 6-game stretch. He's awesome. He was way under drafted the year that he came out. I love J.K. Dobbins as a player. The mitigating factors are that, as Stefania said, it could be a multi-week ramp up. It could be a full month ramp up. Who knows? Moreover, once he's back, maybe the Ravens are saying to themselves, we don't ever want to have him be a 25 carry or even a 20 carry per game kind of guy, because we saw what happened last year with all the injuries that just ravaged us. Not to mention that at some point, Gus Edwards could be back on the field this year and why fantasy football may not love the fact that Gus Edwards has a role in the Ravens offense. The Ravens love that Gus Edwards has a role within the Ravens offense. And the last factor here is that in the two full seasons, let's make it three, last year with Lamar Jackson, and even going back to the year when he was the happier starter alongside Joe Flacco, no Ravens running back has even 250 receiving yards in a full year. This team throws the ball about as infrequently to the running backs. And some of that I don't think is going to change this year. So I love J.K. Dobbins as a player. I'm seeing him creep up into rounds five, even round four right now, depending on where you're playing and who you're playing with. That to me might be a little bit more, a little too rich for where I'm at right now with J.K. Dobbins. Not about the player, it's just about the situation, the injury, and the offense he plays in.
I'm with you. I totally agree, Field, and that's the way that I've been. That's my draft strategy. I've been letting him fall to me, and if he falls to a certain point, then the value can be worth it. But where he's at right now with running back 20, someone I'm trusting as my starting RB2 to start the season, it's a little too much for me right now. All right, you talked about the utilization of the passing game, Field, and we have Hollywood Brown, and his 145 vacated targets are now out of this offense, and it feels like Rashad Bateman is set up to be the guy to take over that spot. How high can Rashad Bateman climb this year with Lamar Jackson under center?
Yeah, I mean, he's got a top 20 ceiling. A really good player, right, as the number one wide receiver in this offense, and take on that Hollywood Brown, maybe not role exactly, but at least some of the volume that Hollywood Brown saw last year and prior seasons as well. Injury slowed him out of the gates last year. He got hurt during training camp. But in the first six games that Rashad Bateman played, first five games, he had at least six targets. So the minute he got back on the field last year, the Ravens wanted Rashad Bateman to be a big part of their offense. Right now, their wide receiver group, besides Rashad Bateman, is one of the bigger mysteries in the NFL. Guys like James Prochet. Devin Duvernay. And it's, you know, they've recently signed DeMarcus Robinson, who was with the Raiders before getting released. It's been a relatively thin group behind him. So whatever you want to say about how things have gone so far for Rashad Bateman, the numbers are not the important part here. The important part is, do you believe in the player? And I do. Really talented guy coming out of Minnesota. Didn't run great during the pre-draft process, so he slid a little bit. But I love the player a lot. This is exactly the kind of player that I like, which is where he is going. Rounds 9 or 10, depending on league size, like that's the point of the draft where basically everything you do, it's not going to cost you. If Rashad Bateman is just okay this year, he won't be the reason you lost your league. But if he hits in a major way,
that upside,
you're not getting Jamar Chase, but you could get a top 20 receiver and in an offense that has a guy who just a few years ago was the NFL's unanimous MVP.
Yeah, absolutely. Stefan, anything you want to add on Rashad Bateman?
Nope.
Okay. Then let's talk about the other pass catcher in this offense that has everybody just all, like everyone's just freaking out right now. Isaiah Likely, right?
Good job there.
So, Andrews, the tight end. I actually did SportsCenter. You said you did SportsCenter on Saturday. I did SportsCenter on Sunday, where I talked about which one of these tight ends come off the board first, Stefania, Mark Andrews or Travis Kelce. I said,
I have a mad crush on Mark Andrews at the tight end position.
You and me both.
I love him. I love him because, and this is no disrespect to Travis Kelce, like he's like tight end emeritus, right? Like by default, you're not going to go wrong. And again, we're doing the thing that Field always talks about. We're arguing between one and two when they're really in the same tier, and you can't go
wrong with either one.
But there is this, you feel like there's an ability to draft Mark Andrews slightly later in your draft and still come away with a guy who could potentially finish the season as number one tight end overall. What I love about him is the relationship with Lamar Jackson. I think you just saw it flourish last year. He is Lamar Jackson's safety valve. Mm-hmm. He is the outlet that he looks for. And by the way, he gets all the looks in the red zone. 22 targets last year, led all tight ends in red zone targets. He's had more than 13, I think, for three straight seasons. So he's going to score touchdowns, and we love touchdowns in fantasy football.
Understanding how close him and Travis Kelce are, my favorite stat between the two is the fact that Mark Andrews is not turning 33 years old this year. And I honestly think that is a big part of it. Field, you can roll your eyes at me if you want to say that age is a thing, but when I'm looking at these two guys, it really feels like 1A and 1B. So which one am I going to take? I'm going to take the one that won't be 33 because I feel like they're going to be so close to each other.
start with the good here again. I want to start with the good before I break the tie here on Travis Kelce versus Mark Andrews. But Stefan, you mentioned that Mark Andrews led the NFL in terms of tight end red zone or end zone targets. He also had at least five targets in every game. There were just four players in the entire league that did that.
That's right.
He had at least 10 targets in 8 of 17 games this past season. He led all tight ends in targets, in catches, in yards. He was tied for the most touchdowns. He had 9 last season. He had just one bad game the entire year, which is a tight end finish outside the top 20. I love the player. He's an absolute super duper star. And it could be that the skill set is just so good that it offsets any of the concerns that you might suggest if you're trying to break the tie between Travis Kelce and Mark Andrews. I will note that Mark Andrews had a better stretch with Tyler Huntley as the quarterback than he did with Lamar Jackson. The Ravens offense was a more proficient passing offense because they had to pass a lot more. And that, so I'm not saying Lamar Jackson's better than Tyler Huntley, obviously. I just waxed on how much I love Lamar Jackson. But one thing we do know is that the Ravens with Lamar as their starter don't want to throw the football that much. Here's the evidence behind that. In the 2 full years as Lamar Jackson as the starter, take out last year because of all the injuries and him getting injured himself, here were their passing attempts. 2019 and 2020, no more than 440 passing attempts in either of those two seasons. Both years, they were dead last in the NFL in terms of total passing attempts. Last year, they were 10th in the NFL with 611 passing attempts. There's just a little bit less opportunity this year for Mark Andrews. Travis Kelce just wakes up and does what he does. And he wasn't that far behind Mark Andrews this past season. That's why I continue to lean towards Travis Kelce, is that maybe the Ravens get back to their roots because they don't have 9,000 injuries and they're winning games more frequently rather than they are losing games, where last year they lost their last 6 games to end the season. That's why I lean toward Travis Kelce versus Mark Andrews. Neither one of them is going to ever be a bad pick. But if we're looking to split this tie between two guys at the same position, I have a lean on Kelce, and that's the reason behind it.
And no problem if you want to draft these guys in the back end of the first round. Not something that I would do, Field. I know it's you've said not something that you would do.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the early, like, you know, the sweet spot is somewhere.
Return is
maybe, yeah, and maybe even a little bit later, depending on how you feel about these guys. But if you can get them somewhere between like 17, 18, and 23, 24, that to me is about where I expect to see them come off the board.
All right. Field, any other Ravens here you want to talk about? I know I made a joke about Isaiah Likely.
Yeah, but I mean, it just he's on the radar as far as, you know, backup tight ends go, but maybe...
Can he
maybe
just be a wide receiver for that offense?
Kind of is. Yeah, I made the comparison. He's Mike Gesicki, right? He's Mike Gesicki for the Ravens. Talented guy, but not a guarantee he'll play that much behind Mark Andrews, because Mark Andrews is one of the best, if not the best, tight ends in all the NFL.
Yeah, you're not wrong. All right. Baltimore has, Caesars has the win total at 9.5 this year.
Yeah, I'm over there. He's this team just bouncing back, having Lamar Jackson, who I think is just going to prove so many people not wrong. That's a weird way of putting it, but like Lamar Jackson feels like he has an odd amount that he has to prove to some people this year.
Swear.
Which
I feel like
they're always going to be naysayers.
Anti-Lamar Jackson. I don't get it.
So I think a big year's in store for them. Yep. I think they win at least 10 games this season. I'm optimistic.
Yep. You're taking over? I am too. I'm taking the over.
I'll take the over as well. I don't mind that at all. All right. We're going to pause. We're going to come back and talk about some of our biggest fears in a second. But first, Stefania, help us pay some bills.
I will, Daniel. You know, when it comes to choosing the top running back, wide receiver, quarterback, even which defense is right for your team on any given week, you know where to turn. But when you're trying to decide on the right credit card for your wallet, the right mortgage lender for your dream home, or the right savings account, where do you go? The nerds at NerdWallet are here to help you make a smart financial decision. NerdWallet is a personal finance site run by money nerds. Think people as obsessed about personal finance as we are about fantasy sports, who want to share their knowledge with our listeners to help them find the right financial products for them. Let's say you're looking for a new rewards credit card. NerdWallet can help you compare cashback cards side by side, so you can feel confident choosing the one that suits your spending. Think of them like your weekly wide receiver PPR rankings, but you're comparing top credit cards that work for you. Ready to make a financial decision? Compare and find top credit cards, savings accounts, and more at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, the smartest decision for all your financial decisions. NerdWallet Companies, Inc., NMLS 1617539. NerdWallet is not an investment advisor nor an investment broker. Information is for educational purposes only.
Get in on the hottest sports action for your shot at cold, hard cash with DraftKings Sportsbook. Bet on your favorite sports all summer long and gear up for football season. Right now, new customers can get a risk-free bet up to $1,000. Just make your first bet up to $1,000, and if it doesn't hit, you'll get another shot at a big win. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code FFF. Make your first deposit and get a risk-free bet of up to $1,000. That's a $1,000 risk-free bet. It's promo code FFF only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details.
If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER in Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and Wyoming. 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-522-4700 in Colorado and New Hampshire. 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana. 877-8-HOPE in New York or text HOPE-NY in New York. Visit OPGR.org in Oregon. Call or text Tennessee Redline. 1-800-889-9789 in Tennessee or 1-888-532-5300 in Virginia. 21 plus, 18 plus in Wyoming. Physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Connecticut, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Louisiana, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming only. Not applicable in New Hampshire and Oregon. New customers only. Minimum $5 wager required. Risk-free bet paid out in the form of non-withdrawable free bet token. Maximum $1,000. Eligibility restrictions apply. Offer ends August 14th, 2022. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details.
Don't reach for Allen Robinson this season.
Another so good pool video. Jeez. From Mike.
Legendary Mike Klein.
If you are
the only
listening,
thing better would be if he had that supercomputer,
dude,
like,
right?
On its own floaty right by him.
Yes.
He definitely has a floaty for that computer,
I
right?
think he's nervous about putting the computer on a floaty just in case something happens. Yeah. You never know. But if you were not able to watch this, make sure you check out at Mike Clay NFL or just come over and watch the YouTube stream every once in a while. You can see
for
some
sure. Welcome
Mike's
aboard.
Doing. All right. We submitted a couple of fantasy fears that we have heading into this football season. And Field Yates, I'm going to start with you. Let's run through a couple of things that both of us, we have two fears apiece that we both have, a couple of things that we're all worried about or want to make sure that we leave our draft with this year.
Yeah, I am more player focused than both you and Stefania are, but there are teammates that I am worried that maybe I'm just too low on. Hunter Renfro and Devontae Adams. I referenced this last week. This was how the idea kind of popped into my head, is that Hunter Renfro, currently my wide receiver 30, started off this offseason at like wide receiver 19 or 20 for me. And I'm wondering if this guy, who's just so good, is being overlooked. I know there's competition for targets. I know that Devontae Adams is a megastar. I know Darren Waller, when healthy, is a megastar as well. How many third pass catchers can be a top 20 or even top 25 finisher at the position? The answer is not many. But I do wonder if Hunter Renfro could buck that trend and be one of those guys. Meanwhile, Devontae Adams, for years, has been in the conversation for very best wide receiver in the NFL, and there are times where I wonder if we are overthinking his new standing in Las Vegas. Again, more competition for targets. There could be more Darren Waller and Hunter Renfro than there was any Packers pass catcher during Devontae Adams' peak over the past five or so years, but maybe he still commands like 10 targets per game. Maybe he pushes for 1,400 receiving yards and 12 receiving touchdowns. None of that would surprise me. It would not surprise me at all if Devontae Adams is wide receiver one this year. So I'm starting to wonder if maybe I did not include Devontae Adams in that elite of the elite tiers of wide receivers, those first three guys that deserve to be in the conversation for a top five overall pick. Those are two fears I have specific to one set of teammates.
Wow. Field, that was great. And also, I hope that you are wrong. I just drafted Devontae Adams in a league, so I'd love it if I have the wide receiver one sitting on my
wide receiver spot. Where'd you draft him?
I dropped him at the 12th, at the tail end of the first round. So,
but again, that so much of right. the conversation has been like Devontae Adams can take a step back. What if he doesn't?
But yeah.
What if the inverse of what we're talking about is that, hey, I know that he may have a slightly lower target share, but what if rather than getting triple teamed, he's getting covered by one person and yes. that one person is not man enough to hold down right. Devontae Adams?
What if there is more big play Devontae Adams than
scary thought for opposing yeah. defenses?
What
that much is for sure.
Actually, make sure that they give the ball to the guy that they traded for like 15 times a game. You know what I mean? Like, how cool would that be, Stefania? What's one of your fears?
My fear is this was more of a strategy related thing than player. Although I gave a player example, mine is that I will wait too long on players that I'm targeting. So we have this thing that we kind of think where players should go, but we play in all different sorts of leagues. And so you have to be reading the room concurrently while you are drafting. And so my fear is that I will not read it quite right and I will get sniped on key players that I really want, because the more we talk about them on the show, the more they start to rise or fall. And one of my favorite players is Dameon Pierce, who I would like to leave every draft I do with Dameon Pierce on my roster. I have been touting him since before it was cool to do it. And now it's cool to do it. And now his ADP is running back 34. He's being drafted in the 11th round. But I'm willing to bet that I'm going to go into some drafts and he's going to be picked up sooner, because people now know who we like. Uh-huh. And, you know, the buzz, the chatter starts to take effect. So for me, and that's just a strategy thing every year, is you think you know what the value should be, but that value changes based on the chatter.
Yeah, honestly, mine falls pretty in line with you. My fear is that I won't get one of the top seven tight ends. For me, that's Andrews, Kelce, Pitts, Waller, Kittle, TJ Hockenson, and Dalton Schultz. Technically, it's Schultz and then Hockenson. So the idea that I won't get one of those, that's my fear. I want to leave the draft with that. And I was actually in a draft, this goes really well to your point, Stefania. I was in a draft this weekend where I was drafting at the turn. And when you draft at the turn, you've got 24, 25 picks in between you and that next pick. So I had to reach for...
I always reach when I'm at the turn, but I don't care.
But it's not reaching. And there's a thing. I don't think it's reaching when you're at the turn. I saw TJ Hockenson as the last tight end that I had on my list, and I wanted to make sure that I got him. And if I didn't, I know he's not going to make it back to me. So I decided to invest a round earlier than I would have based on what his ADP is. I don't care about that number. Forget about that number on the draft software that you're using. Make sure that you find the guys that you like and grab them where you can, because you and I are in lockstep with that. Even though mine is about tight ends, waiting too long is so...
That's a worse feeling to me than... Awful. I don't care if you say to me afterwards, you reached... No, I didn't.
No, I got the guy I wanted.
That's who I wanted.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. All right. That's going to do it for us today. Jam-packed show where you're going to have so much more tomorrow. We're going to finish out the AFC North.
Let's go.
From Double Trouble.
We're almost done with Double Trouble. Yeah.
I know. That's going to be a lot of fun. We have a jam-packed show with the rest of this week, too, once we get done with Double Trouble. So make sure that you come back. Keep following Field Yates. We haven't done Twitter handles on this show, but if you don't follow Field, at Field Yates, at Stefania underscore ESPN on the Twitter machine. I am at Daniel Dopp. For Kyle and David Presley, for Brian upstairs, our director, we want to say thank you guys for listening to the podcast, for watching us on YouTube. We'll see you guys tomorrow. Guys?
What do you mean by not too bad?
It means that...
good?
It was kind of good. Yeah, it was sort of good.
Field's done with it. Field's not talking to you. You guys have
No, I'm good.
He's got Sports Center. Yeah, after that fight, we're going to have to hug it out here, Field.
If you need a stick of Tide, Field is your guy. If you're in Bristol or in Farmington, you should find another ride. Candidly, he hates Mike Clay, and you know that it's a fact, every Yater's gonna Yate, cause he's on TV every day, a spicy tomato who's got the stats, and tweets that'll make you laugh, he's our favorite host, and everybody knows his name, he's Field Yates.